Thank you, Jim. Well, I hope this time the laser works. I want to start thanking the organizers for the invitation. So this is going to be a review-like discussion or review-like talk on the nanoscale phase separation in the CMR materials. If I have time toward the end, I will discuss very briefly also some results for the high TCs, some speculations actually for the high TCs, and for diluted magnetic semiconductors. So hopefully what I will discuss today is more general than just a special calculation for CMRs. So there is I have had many collaborators in this project. I especially would like to bring to your attention the effort by my students Alvarez and Burgi at the Magnet Lab, and more senior collaborators Takashi Hota, who is currently in Tokai, Japan, Matthias Meyer at the Max Planck in Stuttgart, Adriana Moreo at the Magnet Lab, and Seiji Yunoki, who is in Trieste. And many others have helped along the way. The list is there. So, and there is at present, there is a huge effort worldwide in manganese. There are many dozen of groups working on the subject. Certainly, I will be able to cover only a fraction of the total work. So for me, this is a good opportunity to publicize a book that I recently finished for Springer Verla. If you want more detail, hopefully you will find it there, and there are close to 1,000 references. Big effort. Very well. So why there are so many people interested in the manganese oxides? The usual way it goes is that the first thing that people discuss is the CMR effect itself. So motivation number one would be that. So in here, this is an example taken from the work of the group of Tokura. This is a praseodymium calcium manganite at 30%. And in the absence of magnetic fields, the resistivity against temperature has an insulating behavior. But when you introduce magnetic fields, which at least in electronic units are modest in the unit of Tesla, for applications, unfortunately, that's a big field, but for a conceptual viewpoint, Tesla's is small. Below 100 Kelvin or so, you have a dramatic change in the resistivity. For example, with 2 Tesla, you go sort of following the insulating behavior, and then fairly abruptly you drop, and you have a behavior which is metallic-like. And the state you stabilize with the magnetic fields is a ferromagnet. It's a metal, as I said, but it's a poor metal. The resistivity is pretty high at zero temperature. So there are like 10 orders of magnitude of change in the resistivity upon the application of small fields, and we would like to understand why that happens. Okay. So as I said, drastic reduction of resistivity with small fields. This area of manganese had a revival in the mid-90s. The first materials were prepared in the 50s. In those days, people mainly focused on the origin of the ferromagnetic phase. The term double exchange was coined to understand this particular phase here. But in the 90s, also, people started thinking about the possibility of applications of the CMR materials as read sensors. As the bits in the recording medium gets smaller and smaller, we need more sensitive devices to read the orientation of those bits. At present, certainly, the giant MR is well ahead of the CMR. They are already in most of the new computers. But at least as a goal, we have in mind the potential application of CMRs in the computer industry. You see that we would like to have the CMR phenomenon happening there at 300 Kelvin instead of below 150. Hopefully someday that will happen. But so for the time being, let's say that in the absence of current application, let's consider this a basic science problem. So motivation number two is that together with the CMR phenomenon comes a very complex phase diagram. This is lanthanum calcium manganite now. Before it was praseodymium calcium manganite. For lanthanum calcium manganite, even in the absence of magnetic fields, you have a large portion of your phase diagram, this is temperature, this is the fraction of holes that you dope into the system, a large portion is ferromagnetic and is a poor metal. However, you see that there are plenty of other competing phases. In particular, there is occupying an area very similar to the ferro. It's a charge order antiferromagnetic and also orbitally ordered phase. So one of the issues that will emerge, as in my opinion, as important in this context, is the competition of phases. This is also a characteristic of all correlated electron systems. On this side also, we have charge ordering, a fairly mysterious ferro insulator. So, yes.
All these curves are so nicely to each other. How, what do I have to read into this? We don't know, or is there something really interesting going on?
Well, that's a very good point, and it will be part of what follows in the presentation. But let me say in advance that, of course, we don't have a continuum there. There is a finite number of samples, let me put it this way, and concentrations. So there is a bit of imagination also in the presentation of this phase diagram. So, but this is a very important conceptual detail. Could it be that we have these perfectly vertical lines separating phases? So that would be discussed soon. Very well. So to tell you a bit more about the origin or what is the nature of those phases, for example, at x equal to 0, we have, in the case of lanthanum manganese oxide, we have a state that is, as shown there, there is orbital order. The orbitals are not sort of randomly distributed. They point half of them along the y-axis, the other half along the x-axis. And also it goes together with a characteristic spin arrangement. This is an A-type antiferromagnet. It means ferro in plane and an antiferro connection between planes. So that at x0 you have that. At x1 half, you have a state that mainly for historical reasons is called the CE state. That's an old notation from the 50s. And this is the state. You have orbital order again. These orbitals arranged, for example, in lines like this. Some people would call these stripes of orbitals going along x or y. Also, the charge is ordered. You see that the even sides are empty, the odd sides are populated. And in addition, not shown here, there is a non-trivial spin arrangement. Most people will say that there are zigzag chains here, two lattice spaces in that way, two that way, two that way, and so on. Along those zigzag chains, you have a spin polarization. And that goes anti-parallel when you go to the next chain. Right, so there is no net moment, and in that sense it is referred to as an antiferromagnet. Okay, so there are very interesting phases competing. So let's start the discussion on what may be causing all this physics. We, as usual, we start with a structure. This is these materials can come in the perovskite form with the manganese in the middle of the cage of oxygens. The modes of oscillation of these oxygens will play an important role in the theoretical discussion. And this, the green location here is the A site of the perovskite. Also, what goes in there will play a role. But in addition to the 3D material, let's say, we have also single layers and bilayers that have been extensively studied. So the most general formula is this one here. N equal to 1 would be the single layer, N2 the bilayer, and N infinite, that structure, the 3D structure. Okay? Okay, so I don't need to go into details here. This was already reviewed by Keimer on Monday. So it is known that at x0 in the undoped limit, the manganese is in a state 3 plus. So we have to accommodate 4d electrons in the d shell, and the d shell is opens the degeneracy due to the crystal field splitting. And we have the T2G levels and the EG levels. There are 3 T2G and 2 EG levels. From experimental studies of the magnetic susceptibility, we know that the spin is maximized, so there has to be a large Hund coupling favoring this alignment. So basically, we say that the manganese 3 plus we idealize as consisting of a spin 3 half there in the lower level D2G, and then a spin 1 half in the double degenerate EG band. Right. And without a lot of discussion, most theories will assume that this spin 3 half is a classical spin. There are a few tests of that assumption in 1D, where you can do a decent numerical work with a spin 3 half, the fully quantum spin. But it is an assumption of using classically localized spins. And when you start doping, you start removing electrons from the EG band. So when you do that, you create a manganese 4 plus. You still have the localized large spin there, and you have lost the 1 half at the top. So most Hamiltonians in this context that theory is right will contain a large Hund coupling to enforce the alignment locally of the spins. Then it will contain a Hopping T that is for the mobility of the EG electrons. And since experimentally we know that when you remove all the EG electrons, the material is not inert, it has a non-trivial antiferromagnetic arrangement. So to mimic that, people have added a small coupling, antiferromagnetic coupling, between the localized spins. And typical values in units of the Hopping, most studies you will see in the literature have a large Hund coupling, as I said, to enforce the alignment of the spins. At the same time, this prevents double occupancy. This is a technical detail that is very useful for the simulations. If you come with a spin down and you try to locate it there, it will will be penalized by the Hund coupling. It goes the other way, anti-parallel to the localized spin. So if you do in simulations, if you say measure the probability of double occupancy at large Hund coupling, is very small. So that leads people to believe that there is no need to explicitly add a Hubbard coupling in the EG band.
Well, that.
Not that we can do it, but yes.
So there's argumentation with the Hund coupling, of course, to write for one band.
Yes.
Have to take two bands. Yes. Of course, you can have double.
That's true. You can populate two different orbitals. To get out of that problem, I will invoke also in what follows a large electron photon coupling. But you are totally right that this argument breaks down for a two or for a doubly orbitally degenerate EG band, because you could locate the spins parallel to each other in different orbitals.
But Elvia, do you yes? really want J Hund to be more than 8 in units of T being 1?
Yes. It's not ridiculous.
J Hund is 0.8 or 0.7 electron volts per per spin pair. As a matter of fact, Andy Millis, I just talked to him, he's retracted his former...
Well, I want to hear that from him first.
He's actually written a paper on it, so it will come. And it's crazy to make the Hund so big.
Well, the Hund coupling that you can find in the literature, let me see. No, it's a bit larger than that.
3 times that is 2.4.
It's a bit larger than that, George. Let's see if I can find it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't have any doubt that in your paper is like that. So parameters that you can find in the experimental literature locate the Hund coupling between 1 and 2, and then you have to argue what is the T, right? So basically, the physics I will discuss doesn't need the Hund coupling to be as big as 8T. You know, just above 1 will do it. What you don't want is to work like in the case of similar models, like it happens for the heavy fermions, where the J that plays the equivalent of the Hund coupling in the context of heavy fermions, compared with T, that is a number much smaller than 1. What you want is the number to be bigger than 1. But it doesn't need to be as large as 8. So where was I? Somewhere here. Okay. So if you still insist on the one orbital approximation, you know, historically this was the first one. Oops. Historically, this was the first one employed in the 50s. So in this one orbital approximation, then if you want the Hamiltonian written in all its glory, you have the Hopping, you have a local coupling between the mobile spin and the localized spin, and you have the coupling between the localized spins. And just a little comment on the side is that it's pretty remarkable that this lattice condom model can be so rich. In the case where the J is antiferromagnetic here, instead of the one that we want for the manganese, then you have at the small ratios of J over T, you would get this Hamiltonian coming from the Anderson model. So that would be suitable for heavy fermions, and there are many studies in that context. Recently, there are papers by Adriana and collaborators where she found out that this same model has, at intermediate values of J over T, has the phenomenology of the high TCs. There are states that are stripy. She finds enhanced tendencies to go D-wave superconducting here. And the place that I will focus on is the large value of J over T, and with the sign suitable for the enforcement of the maximum spin. So this is the one orbital model, but as some people in the audience already said, we would like to have a two orbital. That would be certainly realistic. So for a two orbital case, you have another index in the operators. You have the site and the spin, and in addition, the orbital index. There is a Hopping, there is a local Hund coupling. And due to the degeneracy of the two states, you have to couple this with phonons, with the Jantner phonons. In here, in practice, the phonons are considered classical, and I don't have anything better than saying that it is a widely assumed technical assumption. This is just to simplify the analysis. There are no studies with quantum phonons. So what you will see in this presentation corresponds to classical phonons. And the modes of oscillation are the Q2 and Q3 modes that correspond to as usual, after 5 minutes, this dies. So the Q2 and Q3 are the modes that Kanamori already told us many years ago. One is shown there. There are two oxygens out and two in. And the Q3 mode is 4 in and 2 out in such a way that the volume is preserved. And there will be a dimensionless number, lambda, that will tell us about the strength of this electron-phonon coupling. And you know, I totally agree with you, George, that a better description should certainly include extra terms, you know, the U's, the U primes, and everything. The only thing I can say is that technically it's going to be quite tough. There are papers in the literature, for example, by Takashi Hota, where he studies with mean field approximations both cases, and the physics is not dramatically different. So, but you're right that these are all assumptions we are making. So, regarding the results, this is the models I mentioned before have been studied numerically under the assumption of having classical localized spins and phonons. And results can be obtained in such a case with standard Monte Carlo techniques. And here you have, a few years ago, Seiji Yunoki established the phase diagram for this model at low temperature. If this is the Hund coupling, and this is the density of of EG electrons, just working in this case in the one orbital approximation, what you find is an antiferromagnetic insulating line over there, a very large ferromagnetic metallic region, which is coming from double exchange, Double exchange is the procedure by which the EG electrons optimize their kinetic energy by aligning the background. So you induce a ferromagnet by that procedure. And in between, a regime of phase separation was found that was somewhat unexpected. People thought that a canted state would do the work of interpolating between the antiferro and the ferro. Instead, you find a very strong signal of phase separation. So if you rephrase what happens at these values of a Hund coupling in terms of a chemical potential, instead of using N, then what we are talking about is a first order transition between the antiferro density 1 and the ferro density less than 1. Right? That eventually with temperature, it opens into a sort of bicritical behavior. And also, it is expected that the phase-separated regime, after you have the tail of a Coulomb interaction and after you have disorder, likely, instead of having a macro separation, you will have a cluster-like state. I will tell you about that in more detail later. Okay, regarding the evidence of phase separation, it comes from studying the density as a function of a chemical potential in the Monte Carlo simulation, and then you see that there are densities that cannot be accessed. No matter how carefully you tune your chemical potential, there is a shunt, a first order transition, as I said, in terms of mu, and this window of densities is unstable. And that happens in all the dimensions we investigated. 1, 2, there are results in dimension 3 that I didn't show. And also in the infinite dimension, Furukawa has studied with the MFT, this type of systems, and you see there is continuity as well. And others, there are many groups that have arrived to similar conclusions. Okay. So this electronic phase separation, some people use the word electronic in front of phase separation here to alert the audience that the states that are in competition have different densities, different electronic densities. I will mention some other sort of phase separation later with that doesn't have that property. So if it is an electronic phase separation, this is in the same class conceptually as the phase separation which has been much discussed for the TJ model in the area of the high TCs. Although in this case, it typically involves the antiferro and a metal or a superconductor, right? And people are still discussing whether for realistic values of G over T, you indeed have that phase separation or not. But in spirit, it's similar. Okay, so those were results for the case of the one orbital model. You know, it's a simple model. There are plenty of papers on the subject, but certainly if you want to capture the nature of orbital ordering here, you have to go to the two orbital model. And these are results at x equal to 0, and you start seeing the presence of several competing phases. For example, the spin arrangements that you can find, even at x0, just changing that coupling that before I called JAF, now is mutating to J prime. So changing this number, you can go from spin arrangements that are of the ferro variety to the A-type antiferro in one direction, ferro in two, to C, antiferro in two, ferro in one, and to G, which is antiferro in the three directions, right? Concomitant with that, for example, together with the A-type, goes this orbital arrangement, where you have half the orbitals pointed along the X direction and the other half along the Y direction. So there is orbital order there as well. No, it's the same in all directions. So each one of these states, in addition, is degenerate, right? So you would have the antiferromagnetism along that direction or along the other two. Yeah, so this phenomena of one direction being preferred than others regarding the antiferromagnetism is a spontaneous symmetry breaking process. It's not something that you put by hand. Okay. Very well. And so this is an example of a case where a relatively small coupling in your model like JAF, remember that I said that the JAF is substantially smaller than the hopping. Nevertheless, when you have many states in competition, that relatively small scale can become much more relevant. The influence of it is amplified. And that will be something that also will influence on the rest of the presentation. Relatively small effects can have large influence on the physics in places where there is a near degeneracy among states. Okay, so I will not go into the fine details of the phase diagram with two orbitals. So all this notation refers to the arrangement of spins. In this case, you have the spin is ferrous, the orbital is disordered, and it's a metal according to the calculation of the optical conductivity. There is a Drude weight at zero frequency. And then you have many other phases. For example, this phase that appears at x1/2. This is a spin ferrous and also is orbitally ordered. So this is a simulation in low dimension. We believe that this is a precursor of the A-type antiferromagnetic state that it has been reported for lanthanum and strontium manganite at x1/2. If you increase the electron-phonon coupling at large values of that number and still x1/2, the simulation gives you as the ground state a charge order state, and we have done this in dimensions 2 and 3, you know, with some limitations in the clusters you can study. And what you see is precisely that complicated CE state. It just comes out spontaneously with the orbital order, the zigzag change, and all that. You know, in the literature you can find a variety of ideas of why that state is indeed stable. But it's pretty remarkable that the CE phase appears as a ground state in these models. So I will claim that the stable phases observed experimentally appear somewhere in the phase diagrams of these models. I will not go to the excess of saying that they have to be in particular orders or in particular realistic values of couplings. As we discussed already at the beginning, this is a very simplified model. However, at least one of the good news is that if you found some phase in the experiment with a particular arrangement, these models have they reproduce that for you. And actually, I will tell you later about other phases that are predicted that are emerging from experiments in the last few months. Very well, and in addition to that, the phase diagram contains very prominent regions of phase separation here and there. So it's apparently an intrinsic part or a feature of these models to have stable regions with the right order of charge, orbital, and spin, and in addition, a substantial portion of phase diagram go phase separated. There are particular cases that are not contained in this phase diagram. Imagine that in studies in two dimensions, there are like lines of stability inside that phase-separated regime. At large electron-phonon coupling, Jota and collaborators found stripes, which that was pretty remarkable. If the electron-phonon coupling is large, the ground state in some regions in parameter space is spin ferromagnetic, and in addition, the orbitals arranged in as shown here on the charge, there is a stripe with empty sites, and there are three lines which are populated. And you see that the arrangements of orbitals pointing along x or y is the same as in the undoped limit. So you have a region which is undoped and a region that is fully doped. And there is a pi shift in the orbital arrangement, similarly as it happens with antiferromagnetism in the stripes in the context of the cuprates. So that's also a recurrent conclusion here, The orbital, which typically points along those two directions, is like a pseudo spin, and it has many of the features of the regular spin in cases of just one band. Right. Okay, so I will say more about these phases. This phase has not been identified yet experimentally, so this is a prediction. Now, regarding the influence of the 1 over r Coulomb interaction, it is widely accepted in this context that the macro separation that you may find formally in the type of models that I show you with mainly local interactions, this will break down when you remember that you have to add the tail of the Coulomb interaction. And it is widely accepted that what you will get are nanometer scale patterns. For example, you may have a regular arrangement of bubbles, or you may have these stripes I mentioned. So this is pretty much in the spirit of what many people have discussed in the HITC context. So the nanoscale is a recurrent conclusion. Having clusters bigger than that is very difficult. That would be very much penalized by the Coulomb interaction. Also, close to the regime of electronic phase separation, you have precursors of it. When you are cooling down in a range of densities and couplings where you will go phase separated at zero temperature, at intermediate temperatures, you start seeing, in the simulation, you start seeing the coexistence of clusters. So instead of having two huge ones, as in the macro phase separation, you start having little islands. And these islands are locally metal or insulator. Charge likes to move inside some of them, and is due to the antiferromagnetic nature of the others, it cannot propagate. So the density of states that you get is a sort of mixture between a gap regime and a featureless metallic regime. Out of the combination of them, you end up with a pseudo gap. This was discussed in a paper by Moreo some time ago. Dan Dessau, in using angular resolved photoemission, also claims to have found a pseudo gap studying the bilayer manganese. So this is another analogy with the HITCs. Of course, we don't have a superconductivity here, but at least we have the some of the phenomenology above the superconducting temperature, like the pseudo gap. Now,
the photoemission data, will they take in a material with phase separation?
Well,
because I thought it was.
Well, there are. I can show you the. Probably during the questions, I can show you the phase diagram of the bilayer. It's as complicated as the one I showed you before. So we have to analyze in what range of temperatures it was done. You know, there are places that are corresponds to a mixture of phases. You know, one, if I show you the phase diagram, you will see that.
I have another question. So I understand the upper curve that you have met an insulator and the phase separation gets something like some spectral wave that is the Fermi level, but having to get because of the insulator. What I don't understand is how you then, with this order, obtain really almost zero spectral function, or some special type of this order you assume here. Because it should still have spectral
radius, don't it? Well, so maybe you are reading too much about this near cancellation. Yeah, the shape is a bit abnormal. I agree with you that it sort of suggests a linear decrease that will collapse to zero weight in there, like in some cases, like in the Coulombic effects. As discussed by Efros and others. So we have not analyzed whether this is truly zero or not.
What is the physical mechanism suppressing the spectral wave in that?
Well, it's the same, this type of results. You will see, this is coming actually. But the influence of disorder, this is disorder influencing on regions where you have a first order transition between the metal and the insulator. Once you have that, Once you have disorder in that vicinity, you create a cluster state. Locally, you favor the face that is on the left or the face on the right. One is metallic, the other is insulating. So the physics that is coming in here without the disorder going down in temperature, you reproduce at very low temperature by adding disorder in the vicinity of a first order transition metal insulator. Right? So it's the pseudo gap in there comes from the same rationale as above. You will see clusters which in here are dynamical, but in here are static. Some of them are metallic, others are insulating. You know, all this is coming soon. So, regarding phase coexistence, this is now turning into the experiments. We have, this is a result from a figure taken from the work of Adriana. This is the same material I mentioned before. The lines are the same as in the phase diagram I show you. The blue here is the ferrophase. But now we have the addition of all these statements, which are taken from the experimental literature. And the experimentalists have extensively referred to some sort of inhomogeneity or another in this context. Above the Curie temperature, there are plenty of papers talking about polarons. I'm not sure if that is the most proper language there, but you can find those papers. Others in that same regime talk about clusters. Below the Curie temperature, there are multi-domains reported. Two fluid pictures are needed to rationalize transport. In here, you have reports with a small angular neutral scattering of droplets of ferro embedded in the antiferro matrix, and so on and so forth. There is only a tiny region that still appears to be homogeneous here. Right? And the scale in which these entities, the size of these inhomogeneities, is mostly the nanoscale, according to experimentalists, although you will see that there are particular cases where the scale is even bigger. So very recently, there has been an STM result by Renner and collaborators that have reported, at least in the surface of bismuth calcium manganese oxide, the presence of two types of regimes. Sorry, it's not very clear from the picture, but in this regime, the distance between these atoms is simply the lattice spacing, of course. All of them are equal in intensity, but in this regime, the distance between these balls is two times the lattice spacing, meaning there is more accumulation of charge in the even sides than in the odd sides. So this is claimed to be a charge order state with a pattern similar to the one I described for you in here. And this is a more uniform state, presumably a metal. There are results by the group of Chion also using electron microscopy where they have reported for now replacing part of lanthanum by praseodymium. They have shown pictures like this where you have a large, the black regions here are metallic, the white are insulating, and the scale is sub-micrometer. So at least there are a couple of papers where they say that nano may not be the only scale, but something bigger may be happening here. Very well. So in view of...
In this state, which is separate on the micrometer, the same charge.
Well, yeah, it's difficult to say that exactly, but the assumption is that...
The same as what's labeled CO and FF.
This CO state is a charge order state of the same variety that I show you that happens here.
Yeah, okay. Is this picture A taken at the same temperature and is the claim that it has the same calcium concentration in both regions, labeled C?
Yes, the claim is that in here you don't have a simple chemical inhomogeneity leading to those two phases. You know, You will have to check in the paper whether that statement is robust or not. I cannot say much about it. The assumption or the belief by the experimentalists in this business is that we are not talking about a trivial chemical inhomogeneity. So the formula is the same in one case than in the other.
Meaning that those people were part or bigger pool.
You know, I'm aware of only one paper by Peter Schiffer and collaborators that talk about a small tendency to clustering of a strontium when you have in the formula lanthanum, strontium, manganese oxide, that the strontium is not entirely randomly distributed. Well, but all the rest assume that it's random.
Does the order of this phase diagram support that interpretation?
Because, the order.
You know, those are very different people now. Putting on
one. Well, let's see. What you may be asking is, The fact that the regions are very large goes against the theory that would say that this electronic separation is happening. Okay, so this is why in the next item goes an alternative to what I said before. But when people saw these pictures, the middle conclusion was that you have to have an alternative to electronic phase separation because these islands are just too large. They go well beyond the nanoscale. Okay. Now, whether they are really homogeneous chemically, you will have to discuss that with the authors. Very well. So, in view of those results that suggest that at least in some particular cases you need perhaps something more than an electronic phase separation, we have been exploring an alternative. And this is something that I already mentioned after your question. Near a first order transition, suppose that you are working in the theoretical framework, you are tuning couplings at fixed density in such a way that by changing couplings in your Hamiltonian, you reach a first order transition between the metal and the insulator. And there are plenty of those. The metal goes together with ferromagnetism, this one goes together with antiferromagnetism and charge order. Apparently, it's difficult to create precursors of one phase into the other. So at least our experience is that the two are separated at low temperatures through a first-order transition. So if you are at the first-order transition, obviously, in the absence of any disorder, you are either metallic or insulating. You don't want to have any interface that costs energy. Now, if you go to the other extreme of putting a lot of disorder, at the level of the lattice spacing, if the disorder is totally uncorrelated, at the level of the lattice spacing, you will locally favor the ferromagnetism or the antiferromagnetism, right? So the disorder wants to create a structure which lives at the scale of the lattice spacing. Now, for weak disorder between zero and very large, for the case of weak disorder, you have a compromise. You still create some islands as the disorder wants, but at the same time you try to keep at a minimum the number of interfaces that the case of non-disorder would tell you have to do. So if you do simulations, you see these patterns emerging very clearly. You can regulate the typical size through the strength of the disorder. So there is, in this context, you either are brave enough to say that your material has a particular value or strength of the disorder, or you simply document, as we are doing, different cases without making, in this context, a particular statement about what is the dominant cluster size. That depends on the strength of your disorder. Right. So this is physics that has been discussed a long time ago. It goes under the INRIMA and Wortis and others' efforts. So this is a disorder-induced phase separation, if you like.
We have about 15 minutes total left.
Total, including the 10 minutes for questions. Wonderful.
We have a lot of questions already, so maybe.
So I can use a bit. Thank you. So this phase competition, I told you about the electronic phase separation. In terms of mu, is a first-order transition between the antiferro undope and the ferro dope. So let's go more general than that. So what we have been playing with is with toy models Yeah, unfortunately, it's very tough to study even these very simplified models that we have cooked up. Even those, if the physics is sort of percolative, as it happens here, even those are difficult. So we have been playing with even simpler spin models that contain, by a suitable arrangement of couplings, say you have a nearest neighbor coupling and you add a next nearest neighbor, for example, that we call J2. By that procedure, you can go from a ferromagnetic phase to other phases. In this particular case, it's a striped phase. There are lines of spins up and down. But hopefully what I will say is independent of the details. So you have two phases in competition separated by a first order line, trying to simulate the physics of the metal against the insulator that we see in the more realistic models. So when you have that, then you add a disorder. You have the disorder in the coupling J2. So locally, you are either with a local tendency to go to the left or the right of the first order transition. And what happens is that for the values of disorder we consider, which are not very strong, for example, far away from the region of competition, the critical temperatures are very little affected. Of course, if you make a huge disorder, this point will go down eventually. But we want to work in the weak regime where these are untouched. Nevertheless, in the place where there is competition of phases, the disorder produces a fairly dramatic effect. The critical, these are two values of disorder. In one case, the critical temperatures get depleted, but you still have the original shape. This point eventually goes down with disorder, and it opens into a window that is disorder even at low temperatures. So these are the two possibilities that we believe will happen after the inference of quench disorder in a first order transition. Yes?
Just a couple of questions about what's raised in this model. So these are classical spins, right?
These are classical spins, yes.
And what kind of branches do they have?
It's the simplest you can imagine. It's nearest neighbors plus next nearest neighbors.
There's no long range.
There is no long range. We are playing with that for reasons that you know, there are concerns about the critical dimension in which this phenomena will happen. Pardon? This study that I'm showing you in this point is a two-dimensional study. I will have results for 3D coming. The effects that you will see in here and in the next view is they happen with the same model, qualitatively the same, but at a smaller scale. You know, the CMR effect. In this context, it will be much larger in 2D than in 3D. I'm not sure if experimentally that's true.
So basically, you have some sort of random debugging model. Correct. Behaving quite differently
in 2D and 3D. Absolutely, absolutely. This is why, in order to have the same effect that you will see soon that we obtain in 2D, in the 3D context, we would like to have perhaps a more correlated disorder, or each impurity affecting more than locally the spin, but interacting with a group of spins. You know, we're exploring that, trying to raise the critical dimension from 2 to 3. Okay. You know, there is a huge literature on the subject. It is known that with correlated disorder you can do that. Very well. So after finding these results, then it is tempting to relate that with what happens in the high TCs. The spin glass may have to do something to do with this. The manganite, these are results for the manganite for the group of Tokura, the ferro and the antiferro phase. There are plenty of cases documented in the manganite literature where you have regions that are disordered that somewhat resembles what we found in the simulation. So the type of states you get there. Now there is an extra regime of temperatures, T star. The T star is the place where originally you have the clean limit phase transition that in the presence of disorder only tells you that locally you want to order, but not globally. So the states that you get in this context, the one that will be of the most relevance is the one at intermediate temperatures. The T star is the original clean limit transition. This is the true transition with the disorder. And here you have a mess of colors. This is the dictionary. The ferrophase, this IC model simulation, the ferrophase comes with the spins up or down. So locally, due to the influence of the disorder, you create the clusters, but you see that there is no global order, more or less the same amount you have in here of red and blue. The net moment is nearly zero. And you also start seeing these green islands. The green islands are islands of the other phase that is in the vicinity. This particular set of pictures are obtained slightly to the left. Nevertheless, there, due to the influence of the disorder, you start seeing the competing phase. Okay. So in this regime, if you take an electron with a spin up, it will move happily through clusters with the same orientation, but it will hit a wall when it reaches the other orientation or the insulator. So the transport is going to be difficult. So the claim or the conjecture is that such a state is the one of relevance for the manganese. This was also a claim done by Chong. So we believe that perhaps if you have preformed islands of ferromagnetism, which are randomly oriented, you have a net zero moment, but with the preformed islands there, you may obtain a rapid change in the properties upon the application of a small fields. So let's address that. This is perhaps the most important result. So let's see if we have a CMR effect there. So what we have done, and also due to the, unfortunately for technical reasons, it's quite tough to do a fully quantum calculation of resistivities. We settled into a more modest goal of having the configuration coming from the Monte Carlo, and then you set up a resistor network approximation. If you have a couple of islands that are of the same orientation, you connect them, but different orientations will have an infinite resistance in between, and the same when you connect with the insulator. Right? So these are local rules that globally, they give you results like this. If you solve the Kirchhoff equations in this context, you get, as anticipated, a large peak in the resistivity against temperature. The T star is somewhere here, the true critical order is somewhere here. You have this very large effect. And the real important point is what happens when you start adding small fields. When you put fields that are small in the units of the problem, in this type of little spin models, it's just the nearest neighbor coupling. When you put, for example, 10 to the minus 3 in the magnetic field, the resistivity goes down by a half, and 10 to the minus 2 is sufficient to kill entirely this peak. Right? And what is happening here is that the messy original state that has the same amount of blue and red approximately and a lot of insulator there, these red regions can easily rotate upon the application of the external field. And as a consequence, you see that this is the picture. This is the state after putting a field of a hundredth of the strength of the natural units of the problem. The red is virtually gone. And now for the up electron spin, you have plenty of channels to conduct. Right, so the resistivity is dramatically affected. The reason is that the field is small, but the effective spin of each one of these bubbles is huge. The net effect is finite. Okay, so here you can see that in a tiny movie. At zero field, there is the same amount of red and blue, no net magnetization. When you put a fields, and we are changing from frame to frame by this tiny amount, then very quickly the red is gone. It rotates into the orientation of the field, which favors the up electron. And you see that rapidly you converge to a state that favors the conduction in a percolative manner of the up species. There are still plenty of regions which are disordered, so this is a bad metal, if you like. But nevertheless, it goes metallic. There is a dramatic change in the arrangement of the spins, due to the fact that they are already preformed.
Was there a dipole interaction between these?
No, there was no dipole. Yeah, we are keeping, at this point, we are keeping everything short range. These are the results for 3D that people really ask me about. The shape of the plots is quite similar as in 2D. However, the scale in the vertical axis, you will see that the effect is not so large. In other words, the peaks for the resistivity, they we have to scale by a factor 10 or so the axis to go from 2D to 3D, and that may be related with the INRIMA physics.
Five minutes
to go. Okay. So we are working on this, Antoine. We are trying to go beyond the random field notion, the local interactions, trying to put effects simulating strain, simulating Coulomb forces. There is a recent paper by Kun Yang that you can find in the ConMat arguing that this type of effects would change the critical dimension. But we are still not done with the analysis in 3D. Okay, and then very quickly I tell you that there is a lot of experimental work being done to try to prove right or wrong these ideas. There are cases where you find experimental phase diagram with this sort of bicritical shape. In other cases that presumably have a strong disorder, you open a window between the ferro and the antiferro that it is labeled as glassy. So that goes in agreement with the theory. Also, there is a structure at high temperature that is being unveiled by neutron scattering. This is diffuse scattering is being investigated. In a work by the group of Schefflin, it has been observed that there is a signal that corresponds to charge order or short-run charge order, although the experimentalists tend to use the term correlated polarons. And the signal goes up and then down with temperature, and it sort of follows the behavior of the resistivity. So it is believed that it has a common origin. So these bubbles that are charge order above the Curie temperature may be responsible for the profile that we get for the resistivity. Okay? And eventually this signal dies at the T star. Okay, there are other evidence of T star. I don't have time to discuss that. Interesting results are being unveiled by Tokura and collaborators. They have a material with a very nice bicritical behavior with crystals that they took them a long time to prepare. Now, if you take the same composition and you brutally quench that, you have a more disordered state, and he has observed a dramatic change in the phase diagram. All the critical temperatures go down rapidly, and a glassy behavior is obtained in the middle. Okay. And the high TCs appears to have similar physics. These are the famous results of Seamus Davis with a sort of granular superconductor there. So it may happen that, and these are speculations motivated by the CMR physics, it may happen that in the high TCs, the 214 at least, perhaps there is a first order line separating the antiferro and the superconductor that went as a glassy state due to the influence of disorder. Okay, so, and this has been discussed by others as well. So percolation and Griffith temperatures then come to the table in the high TC context. There has to be, if this is true, an analog of colossal effects in high TCs as well. If it is true that there are preformed islands of superconductivity here, there must be some sort of procedures such as proximity effects by which you could align them, align the phase of them, and create a superconductor rapidly out of a non-superconducting regime. And I don't have time to discuss coexistence of features in photoemission. Okay. The other side, the electron dope, seems to have a more first-order-like transition between the antiferro and the superconductor. Okay, well, no time to discuss diluted semiconductors, sorry about that. And new phases, well, you will have to talk to me in the coffee break. There are many experiments that are unveiling exotic phases in manganese that fortunately have been found in the simulations. You will see a paper coming in Nature by Mathur reporting a ferro phase which is charge order that was already there in all studies that that we carry out. So conclusions. So experimental and theoretical work tend to agree that nanoscale phase separation exists in the CMR materials. Although I mentioned that there are a few experiments with micro separation. The theory suggests two types of separations, electronic or disorder induced. And you have seen the movie confirming that this type of a scenario at least produces a CMR effect. I hope nature agrees with us and is that the mechanism. But at least there is a paradigm to address the CMR. A new scale appears, and this could happen also in the high TCs. So the bottom line message is that apparently in transition metal oxides, the two most popular ones being the Cuprous and manganese, the physics of inhomogeneities certainly cannot be neglected in this context. So thank you very much.
Well, there was lots of discussion as we went along, so maybe one pithy question, and then we should push on to the next one.
Crucial for understanding the CMR is to understand the parameter that you insulate, which in experiment has this quasi appearing to zero or almost to zero. I understand that you can describe the insulating behavior. Would you agree with me that you don't describe or understand the quasi gap?
The quasi-gap, let me see. Did you invoke experiments? What experiments you have in mind?
Well, then, for example, the paper from 1995 by Seidel, Osterkamp-Murray, where they analyzed spectrum and inverse spectrum.
The only thing I can say in this context is that I believe that that pseudo gap that we have found in the simulation is up there above the Curie temperature, and there are photo emission results by the saw that have found something similar. But I will have to think a bit more about those old papers and discuss it with Fujimori.
Okay, so let's thank our speaker again.